Welcome back, Backpacking Experience listeners, and happy 2021. I'm so glad that you're here. This is the first episode of 2021, and I've got a great conversation to share with my guest, Amanda Outside, as she's known on YouTube and through her blog. We'll get into that more in just a couple minutes, but I first want to get a few housekeeping things out of the way. Now, throughout 2020, my ability to record podcast episodes on a more frequent basis was limited with some life changes that took place for me. I had a job change, and now that much of that is stabilized, I'm able to refocus some more time into more frequent episodes, which I'm very, very excited about. And I've been lining up topics and new guests to share that I'm really looking forward to sharing with you all. So in preparation for all of that, I have a favor to ask of all of you. If you find any enjoyment out of these episodes, please consider doing two things. First, share the podcast on your social media, whether that's Facebook or Instagram, and then just tag me in your post because I want to see who's listening to the show. So when you tag, you can tag the Backpacking Experience on Instagram or Backcountry Exposure, since that is basically who I am on all of my other social media, YouTube, Instagram, and such. But yeah, I want to see who's listening to the show and what you enjoy about it, or even what you don't enjoy about it, what I could do differently. And, you know, one of the hardest things about doing this is the lack of interaction with listeners. So the second favor to ask is for you to jump on to Apple Podcasts, since I know the majority of you listen through Apple based on my analytics and such, and leave a rating and a written review. Those reviews are super helpful, and I know that every single podcast host says, hey, leave a review. It helps. But it truly, truly does help people find the podcast a little bit easier. And then in those reviews, tell me what you like and even what you don't like about the show. And you can even shoot me an email, backcountryexposure@gmail.com, and share feedback with me. I would love to have that interaction. So the feedback is super valuable to help me make better content for you guys to listen to. And even share with me the guests that you would be interested in hearing from or specific topics that you would be interested. I would just like genuinely really appreciate all of that. Now, I also want to thank my longtime sponsor of the show, Art of the Trek. And if you've not gone to Art of the Trek yet, and you've been a listener to the podcast for any period of time, you're missing out. So go to Art of the Trek to see what they're doing and the amazing mapping software that they've developed. And if you haven't gone to check them out, you're truly missing out on amazing services that they have. I mean, they have a free route guide planning service where they will help you plan well thought out backpacking trips. I mean, it's totally free. So do yourself a favor, head over to Art of the Trek, browse through the site, and start planning your next backpacking trip. Lastly, this episode is also sponsored and brought to you by Sawyer Water Filters. Sawyer has been a great support of the podcast. And more importantly, they've proven themselves as the standard when it comes to hollow fiber water filters. I had a great conversation with Travis Avery on a recent episode. In fact, the one before this, talking all about the history of Sawyer, what they're doing, how they're giving back. Just an amazing conversation and definitely recommend checking it out. But their water filters, they're very reliable. They're built like tanks and very cost effective. So also, anytime that you buy and use a Sawyer water filter, you can know that your purchase is also helping create clean water opportunities for developing countries who rely on Sawyer for clean water. That's an amazing thing to get behind. So thank you to Sawyer for helping support the Backpacking Experience. And now let's get to my conversation about awesome backpacking and camping food with Amanda Outside. All right, everyone. I am very excited to have Amanda from Amanda Outside on YouTube, as well as the interwebs here on the podcast today. Amanda, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited for this chat.
Yeah, we've been trying to coordinate a time to have this time to record an episode for quite a while. You've been traveling, which I want to talk about here as we get started. You spent some time in Montana, correct?
Yeah, I spent a couple of weeks around the holidays up there. My parents are in the process of moving there, so I got to go up there and experience the cold. There wasn't that much snow yet, but yeah, it was just kind of nice to have a different scenery and a new area to explore. I'm hoping to actually do a lot more up there this year. But yeah, then I'm mostly in Utah. I do a lot of stuff around Utah.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about all of the like your background and how you ended up in Utah and that kind of thing. But for everybody listening, you and the way that you and I connected is through YouTube. So we're going to talk more than I typically would in an episode when I have guests on about YouTube in this conversation, just because that's a lot of the like commonality that you and I have in what we're doing with our outdoor lifestyle. But I particularly want to talk about the video that you released today that was really enjoyable to watch. So you basically put out a vlog of your time in Montana and watching the animals, but maybe you could talk about what that was like to share that style of video. But then there's something that I noticed in that video that I want to talk about.
Okay. Yeah. So I am on YouTube. The goal is to upload a video every week, and it ranges from, you know, tips to, and then I do some vlog stuff. And that Montana vlog was a bit different than anything I've ever made before. I typically have a very clear vision for videos that I want to make and like talking points and things I want to say. And I'm pretty organized. But for that, I just was in Montana. I was kind of taking a couple weeks off with my family over the holidays. And I just filmed random parts of my day and my trip there. And so we went outside to look for bighorn sheep, and we watched them for hours on the mountainside. And so I filmed some of that, and we went for a hike, and we played by the frozen river. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do with it. But for me, like, one of the reasons I keep coming back to YouTube right now is I love the process of making the video and telling a story and sharing. I think of it more, I don't want my videos to ever be like, hey, look at me in nature and all the cool things I'm doing, but really more like an experience. When someone watches the video, they can feel something and be inspired to go and look at a mountainside. It doesn't have to be like epically long hikes, but I just want it to be more of like an immersive sort of experience when someone's watching it, and really pull them in with the music and the footage, and less about me and more about nature, I guess. And so that's kind of how that video came about. It was just sort of a story that of my time those couple weeks in Montana.
I think you did a fantastic job of like really capturing that, because I mean, it probably seemed very random for you, but the editing that was done in that video, it was just a very enjoyable, particularly for me, because I love Montana as a state and want to spend a lot more time up there. I've talked about that in previous episodes with other guests, but yeah, it was really cool. But I'm curious to learn about, and if you're willing to spill the beans, because you said that you would be sharing more about in a certain artistic process that you've been working on. If you don't want to spill the beans, I didn't prep you for this, but as I watched your video today, you were burning a wood stump, like a tree stump.
Yeah.
And then if I saw correctly, you were using it like a paint roller and applying ink to the stump to then transfer it to paper, is like creating art pieces of tree stumps, right?
Yeah. So this is something I saw, like this being done, or a print of it at some point at some time. I have no, I don't remember where or when. And I just thought in my head, like, oh, I want to figure out how to do that. And so I just kind of had the time and I started playing around with it. And it's actually a pretty simple process of you have this piece of wood and you go through a series of like burns on the top of it, and it kind of opens up the rings and the cracks in the wood and just makes it look really cool. And you kind of brush it a little bit and then put the paint on it, and you can sort of stamp the wood onto paper, and you can see so many of the details in the rings in the tree. Like, I was shocked at one, how easy it was, and two, just the amount of detail that you could get. And so I thought this was like a really fun creative project, because every tree that you find is like unique, which I think is really cool. And you can find different types of trees. I haven't really experimented with different types of trees and how hardwood versus softwood would affect things. But so I made these stamps, and I kind of want to put them on t-shirts and sweatshirts. So that's cool. I've been playing around with like mock-ups of that, and I want to get some samples and just see. It looks really cool on the computer. So I want to get some samples and see how it looks and maybe go that direction. Just because it's something that's kind of, a little bit more unique, and just, it looks really cool.
Yeah. I wondered if watching that process today, if you were potentially going to be opening like a shop and selling prints or like some kind of t-shirt, because I happen to be looking at it right now. There is a print hanging on my wall that is of that exact process of a tree stump that my wife got for me for Christmas several years ago. And it's one of my favorite things that has ever been given to me.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, I was thinking about doing prints as well, because I want some prints for my house. It's just so cool, especially like, I don't know, because you just being able to see that level of detail and all the tree rings is just so cool. And it's so simple too. It's like just a nice black and white print. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it brings that element of the outdoors and that passion for that lifestyle into your home. Like, very cool. So I'm excited to see what comes from that from you. So very cool. So I guess moving on a little bit, your YouTube channel is Amanda Outside, but you also have a website, AmandaOutside.com, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Tell me about it. What is Amanda Outside? Because if I understand right, you're doing this as your full-time work, correct?
Yeah. So 2020 was my first like full year doing this full-time. And my main focuses are the YouTube channel and the blog. They both are kind of complete on their own, I would say, but they also really complement each other. The blog, I will embed videos in and then typically write out, if I'm doing like a how-to video, I'll write it out as well so people can either watch or read and add photos. The blog is also where I do a lot of trail guides and nitty-gritty trail details, because I typically don't put that stuff in my videos because it's hard. I mean, I can't update that over time in a video, but on a blog post, I can keep up with any changes or permitting or trail details and stuff like that, update it. But it's pretty much the same content on the blog and YouTube, although YouTube has more of the vlog style videos that we were just talking about as well.
Gotcha. So I assume that the blog started before the YouTube, and was there like a creative process that made you move from the writing aspect to then creating videos, or what was that like for you?
So I actually was on YouTube first. So I've been on YouTube for a long time, but not as Amanda Outside. I started a channel a long time ago about something like completely different. It was kind of more yoga related. And I've always felt like just communicating in video felt a little bit more natural to me. And so that's why I just kind of started with video. Over the years, like I kind of mentioned earlier, I've really developed like a love for the video creating process and the creative outlet that is for me. You know, being able to share nature in this way and tell a story is just something I'm really passionate about. And so the blog kind of came as a way to, just provide like a different way for people to consume the content. But I think my like true love is video.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. My experience is a little bit the same. I started a blog as well. And then I started YouTube to be a complement to the blog, because I was like, well, if I'm going to write gear reviews on things, then I should also do a video review and embed that in the blog. And then that's where like my whole YouTube thing started. And I basically stopped with the blog altogether and have just stuck with YouTube ever since. But yeah, I 100% agree on that, like creative process and what being able to do with video allows you to have like so many different immersive experiences of what you're doing out there. And I don't think people who aren't like actively videoing their trips or vlogging necessarily like get that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. And like, it's cool, like, cause people also see me, right? So like, you know, they can hear me talk and I feel like I can connect to people a lot better through video. And so that's another added benefit, I think, to just the video aspect of things.
So give me a little bit of like background on you and like your history, like how you basically had, because I know you're not from Utah, because like your about page on your website says that like you currently reside in Utah, but not from here. Like, what's your background? How did the outdoors become like such a big part of your life and to where what you're doing now?
Yeah. So I was born in Connecticut. I kind of, you know, grew up on the East Coast. I went to college out on the East Coast. And I played outside as a kid all the time. Like that was a huge, huge part of my childhood. And my family did go camping, but we didn't really do like hiking, definitely no backpacking. It really wasn't until after college, actually, that I went on my first sort of backpacking trip. I kind of on a whim decided that I was going to go hike the Camino de Santiago in Spain.
Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't own a backpack. Like I had never done like a through hike like that before. So I kind of jumped into that. And that was kind of my first longer hike. And then after that trip, I moved out to California, Northern California, and I lived there for a little bit. And that's where I really got into hiking and backpacking. I started mountain biking and just spending a ton of time outdoors. And I honestly just noticed that I felt better, like physically, mentally, emotionally, like just time outside in the sunshine just felt really good. And so that just naturally sort of became a bigger part of my life and what I did with my free time. But that's really how I got into it. I really didn't start hiking until my early 20s. Yeah.
Very cool. So what kind of backpacker or hiker would you consider yourself at this point?
I would, a weekend warrior, if that's like, I don't consider myself a through hiker. That's not really what my channel or my blog is about. I'm definitely kind of like a weekender. I love to get out for, you know, 2 to 4 day trips and do a lot of smaller trips frequently throughout the year. I really like that. I like kind of having that balance of like being at home to get a bunch of work done and some editing done and have a bit of a routine and a community here. And then also, just have a lot of fun short trips throughout the year.
Nice. Is there like a specific area in the state that you, or at least I guess in the West in general, that you feel like you continually gravitate toward? for the trips that you're planning and such?
I would say I really, like, obviously pretty much everywhere in Utah, Idaho and Montana are kind of the other areas that I feel like I've been to them and I just am dying to go back and explore more. So that's kind of the area that I've been hanging out the past couple of years and just exploring a lot of things. We're so lucky in Utah because we can drive a lot of different directions.
Oh my gosh.
Even Nevada too. There's so many cool things out there. So yeah, they're all over the place, really.
Yeah, there's like, and it was only until a couple of years ago that I really realized Nevada has some great hidden gems of places to go. Like, I just learned about the Ruby Mountains.
Oh yeah,
years ago, and I haven't spent any time in the Rubies. Have you spent any time out there?
No, I have. I planned a backpacking trip there this summer, but I just didn't. It just didn't happen. But
yeah, it was the same for me.
To go out there. I'm actually hoping to do like maybe a late spring trip out there this year. But like Great Basin is another area that I was blown away by.
Yeah.
So yeah,
lots of that's one of my favorite national parks, if I'm being honest. Yeah, me too. And it's one of the least visited national parks in the whole national parks system.
I know, and it really is so cool.
So if we move on a little bit, let's talk into some more YouTube talk. Now that everybody listening has a little bit better understanding of your background, which is always nice, I think, for people to hear more about the person that's behind the camera. But your experience obviously has come from a lot of personal learning. When I watch your channel and your videos, there's a lot of like tips for beginners and how to choose a proper campsite. And we're going to talk on the second half pretty much of this interview about backpacking food and all of that, because that's one of the things I first like enjoyed about your channel is all the great backpacking food options. But you share a lot of stuff that is very helpful for like new campers and hikers. So this is a little bit of a loaded question, but if you could narrow down maybe three things that every new hiker and camper should know, what like three basic things should every new camper and hiker know when they go out?
Okay. Yeah, that is a loaded question.
Okay, you're on the spot.
Yeah, I would say the first one is know your ability and like start small. And I guess along with that, like planning, right? So like when you're sitting out or planning out a trip, knowing your ability so that you can plan for it. And a good trip always starts with a lot of planning, I guess is my point. So know your ability and kind of, if you've never gone hiking before, it's probably wise not to plan a multi-day backpacking trip with so many miles, you know? So it's kind of being aware of where you're at, and a day hiking is such a great way to kind of get a feel for your abilities. And I feel like that's something that you kind of learn over time as well. Like I've done so much hiking and backpacking that I can hear of a trip, and if I know how many days and the start and the end elevation and the miles, like I can have a pretty good idea if that's something that I'm going to be capable of doing. So sure. I guess, yeah, start small, know your ability. The next one would maybe be know how to use your gear. So in other words, don't buy a new tent and then take that tent out and try to set it up for the first time when you need it. So practice sort of putting your gear together. If you have a water filter, know all the parts, know how to back flush it, how to take care of it, so that when you need these things, you're not trying to figure that stuff out. And then I guess the third one would be just taking ownership, like know how to navigate. I think it's a great idea to go camping and backpacking and hiking with other people that have more experience. But I think it's easy to sort of slip into that, oh, well, they're just going to, I'll just follow them, or they're just planning. And so I would say know how to navigate and really take ownership of just being an active participant in planning out the trip and making sure that you can get in and out on your own if you had to. So I guess those would be my three things.
that's great. Do you have any like specific tools that you use for planning trips that help you plan, like how to find trails that you check out or want to do, or like specific navigation apps that you use or that you prefer?
For planning, I use the Gaia GPS app a lot. And with like, I have a premium membership, so it's like a paid app, but, it's really cool because they have land ownership overlays so that you can see very clearly. That's a big one for me when I'm camping, like making sure that I'm on public land and not private land. So they have really cool overlays that help with the planning. And then you can also see trails on there and kind of get an idea of places to, hike. I'm really into like exploring lately. So sometimes I'll go out without a specific trail that I want to do in mind, but kind of if I'm going down like a forest road or something, I'll see what's nearby. And but yeah, like when I'm planning out certain areas that I want to camp, that's an app that I use a lot.
Nice. Yeah. I think that I've not used Gaia for some time. I use a different one. On my phone at least, called Topo Maps Plus. And it doesn't have that, at least to my knowledge, doesn't have that land use overlay. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's like probably one of the more important things that people that are new to hiking and backpacking are not as educated in, and probably one of the more important things to become educated in, because it dictates like how you obtain permits and how, like the ways that you can travel and use those lands and that kind of thing. And yeah, so I'm really glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to talk about backpacking food?
Yes. That is one of my favorite topics.
yeah. So let's spend a good chunk of time talking about all the amazing food that I see you make on your trips. And I used to think that I made good food on my trips. And then I found a certain freeze-dried meal company that I ended up becoming an ambassador for, that I just became lazy and I stopped cooking. And now I just eat those meals. But when I see all of the stuff that you're like taking on the trail and your approach, like it's very, very cool. So let's just start with maybe some of your favorite backpacking meals, and then we can kind of go from there.
Yeah. So my favorite backpacking meal is the most boring and simplest one. And it's just like pasta and like sauce. Really simple. But I don't know, after a long hike, there is just nothing better to me. And I have a dehydrator at home, so I make all of my own meals. I've been doing that for at least, I think, a couple years now. And that one is just, you know, it's so fast to whip up in the dehydrator. And I love that I can like make my own serving sizes. So a lot of times when I'm planning out a trip, I will make bigger servings for like my bigger hike days. And yeah, just a bag of hot spaghetti after a day of hiking is my favorite. And then I also like, there's another one that I make. It's my boyfriend Nick's favorite, and it's a basil pesto couscous. And that one doesn't actually require a dehydrator. We just cook it in our little camp pot. So it's just a one pot thing with a little stove. And that one is couscous and then a packet of basil pesto seasoning and some olive oil. I bring some Parmesan cheese as well, some sun-dried tomatoes, and you basically just put it all in a pot and that's it, you know, bring it to a boil. So those are like probably the top two. I've been experimenting with a lot of new recipes and stuff. That's something I want to come out on my channel with more, is just recipes for making your own backpacking food. So I've been testing a lot as well, but nothing beats the pasta.
Just meat sauce and pasta.
Yep. So yeah,
that's awesome. I like to hear all of those different ideas around food, because I think it's easy for people to get overwhelmed with, like, how am I supposed to cook pasta, or how am I supposed to cook all of these different things? Can I take vegetables with me? Well, if I take bread, it's just going to get smashed. So what are the options there? Like, but there really are so many good meals that you can make. And I'm curious if you have any particular tips of when you're walking through the grocery store and trying to find things that are not freeze dried, to take that make really good, delicious meals.
I'm just always looking for, things that do not need, I like to keep it simple when I'm backpacking, and most of what I make is just boiling water in a pot, or either adding it to a bag. So things like couscous, which cooks really quick, is always a good base for meals. And, just looking for little things that come in little packets as well. So like one of the things that you can buy is like a little single serving of olives. And I know that sounds weird, but like, I love olives. They're super salty, love them on the trail. And that's just like something that you would probably breeze right by in the grocery store, but it's like, oh, I could take that backpacking, and it gives you a little bit of variety from like the normal trail bars. So,
right.
Yeah. So just kind of stuff like that. I'm always on high alert when I'm in the grocery store for things like that. And then like seasoning packets as well. Like I was saying, you can buy a lot of like pre-mixed little packets, like the basil pesto, which I never knew existed until I was looking for backpacking ideas. So yeah, that's kind of.
And when you're backpacking, are you doing any, is it anything when you, because car camping is going to be different. Obviously, you have so much more available to you. But as far as backpacking, are you really not ever taking a fry pan or anything like that and sauteing and doing those kinds of meals?
Yeah, I don't get into that too much when I'm backpacking. I have made pancakes, though. That I will definitely do. We have a little frying, like a tiny little frying pan. It also doubles as the lid to our pot. And I've taken like a pancake mix where you just add water to it and make little pancakes. And I put, instead of syrup, I'll drizzle like some nut butter on top of it. And that's a really filling breakfast. But I don't really do, like, I haven't really brought a lot of fresh veggies and done that kind of stuff. Because I don't know, I like to keep it pretty simple, adding hot water to things. But also like, and that's why the dehydrator is so cool, because I can sort of do all that prep at home and all that cool cooking and just dehydrate it. And then I have the benefits of like a home cooked meal, but all I have to do is add hot water to it. Gotcha. So that's sort of like, the dehydrator has really opened up a whole world of, things for me. And it's also good for hiking snacks as well. You can make beef jerky and fruit roll-ups. And so me loving to cook and loving all things food, that's been a really cool addition to my backpacking food.
Yeah, that's a good segue into the next thing that I want to ask about food is just good, like on the trail with your pack on or day hiking snacks that really provide like good calories. And the reason I want to ask this is one of your, I don't know if it's necessarily a recent video, but you were hiking a local mountain here in Utah, Mount Tipinogos. And it was cool to watch that video because, I mean, you were hiking and on a day hike and showing that, but the primary focus of the video was showing what you were hiking or what you were eating during a day hike. And I mean, I think it's easy for people to just go like, oh yeah, I'll take trail mix and granola bars or a Cliff bar, and that's going to be enough. But like, there's so many other awesome trail foods to eat that you don't have to cook. You don't have to have a stove. So I'm curious what like some of your favorites that are a little bit more unique and not necessarily nuts and bars kind of thing.
Yeah. So I I like jerky, like beef jerky is one of my favorites. I guess I wouldn't say that's very unique, but I do like to take that a lot because it's just a good source of protein. It's nice and salty. I have a couple protein bars that I get from the store that are part of my regular rotation. Trail mixes, the olives that I was just talking about. That's a weird one that I really do love. Like I just love olives in general. And let me think. I also make like little protein energy bites at home as well. And I love to take those hiking because they're just, I bake them with a lot of dates and coconut and they're just a really good source of energy. I'm sure there's some other one. Plantain chips. I like to take plantain chips.
Yeah, like just like dried.
Yeah, they're really healthy. I'll even put nut butter on them, which I know sounds weird, but I like that. dried mango. Oh, yeah. Dried mango is, I love it. So good. So those are kind of the ones that I think I bring a lot.
Okay. So now let's talk about car camping meals. Because I know that like when you are sharing videos and stuff and even on your blog, like, you're not only backpacking. So what kind of car camping meals are some of your favorites that are easy and anybody could do?
Yeah. So I would say the car camping meals is the bulk of my channel at this point. I really love.
Which isn't a bad thing at all.
Yeah. No, I really love cooking outdoors and sharing meals around a campfire. It's just one of my favorite things. But there are so many really easy camping meals that you can make. Some of my quick and easy go-to ones that you can make with just a camp stove and a cast iron pan are like quesadillas, pancakes, tacos, stir fries, and ramen. You would need a pot for, but ramen's really easy. We crack an egg in there for a little protein. Those are a lot of my go-tos. There's a lot of resources for just camp stove meals because when we have fire restrictions pretty much everywhere in the late summer, those are kind of the meals that I go to a lot. Tacos, probably one of my top ones. I love tacos.
Nice. Do you dabble much into like Dutch oven cooking or anything like that when you're out?
Oh yeah. Dutch oven cooking is so much fun. So I would say like, I love to cook, but baking is like my first true love. That's like the first thing I remember loving to do as a kid was bake. And so the Dutch oven is just like a dream come true because it allows you to actually bake things and kind of have somewhat of an oven when you're outside. And it's always so impressive, the things that you can make with a Dutch oven. Like, so nachos, for example, are one of my go-to Dutch oven meals. They're the meal that I suggest beginners make if you want to get into Dutch oven cooking because it's just really, really easy. You're basically just melting cheese. But when we take friends or family camping, that's one of the ones that I make a lot because it's just so impressive. Like they're like, wow, you can have nachos out here? What in the world? and like Dutch oven brownies. And so there's just a lot of really fun things that you can do with the Dutch oven. And so, yeah, I absolutely love it.
And I can't imagine that like you're really using super fancy equipment or gear to do this, just like probably a basic two burner like Coleman stove, or I mean with the Dutch oven you're just putting it on a fire or with the charcoal briquettes. But have you found like specific gear items for the kitchen, the outdoor kitchen, that have made cooking easier or like less messy, just things that you've learned from so much time out that makes it easier that people would enjoy hearing?
Yeah. So I do kind of, I like to keep it simple. You know, I don't want to bring a bunch of stuff that we don't actually need or use. So I have a really simple Coleman propane camp stove. We've had it for years. It's like pretty cheap, really basic, two burners. And then a cast iron pan. So I'm kind of a nerd and I collect cast iron, antique cast iron. So I have a antique Griswold cast iron pan. It's about 100 years old, which is pretty
cool.
Yeah. Like every time I cook with it, I'm just like wondering the meals that were made in this pan 100 years ago. And yeah, so a cast iron pan is great though, because you can cook with it over the camp stove or you can cook with it over the fire. You know, so it's pretty versatile. A water container is another one. You know, I want to be able to have water if I need to cook with or refill my water bottles. A cooler. A cooler allows you to obviously bring perishable foods, which would open up a lot of options for cooking. And then your basic, you know, plates, spatula, bowls, fork, spoon, that kind of stuff. But that's really kind of the bare bones, I would say. And then a Dutch oven if you want to get into that. But pretty much all the meals that I make are with just those things. And I would say actually one of my other favorite camping meals is foil packet meals. And you don't really need any of that stuff for foil packet meals.
Right.
You basically just add meat and chopped veggies into foil and throw it on the coals. And they're pretty hard to mess up and they're always really good. So that's another great meal idea.
Yeah, one of the things that I always think about anytime somebody brings up the foil packet meals, I can't remember what we called them as kids, but there was always like the burnt parts of it, but you would take a bite of that carrot or the potato and it would just burn your tongue and you'd spit it back out. Like that's just the memory that I have of tinfoil dinners is you dig into it, you take a bite of that potato and it burns your face off. And
it's so funny.
Part of being out camping, right?
Yeah. And like, you have to wait. Like I usually cook them for like 40 minutes. So in the time they're done, you are like ready to eat. Usually it's hard not to burn your mouth.
Yeah. So what about like with your backpacking setup? What kind of stove or system do you like to use for backpacking?
We have a pretty, my boyfriend and I share most of our gear. But we have a little, Snowpeak. I don't remember the exact name, but it just screws onto the propane can.
It's just like a standard canister stove.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like a, pot. And that's pretty much, cause like I was saying earlier, most of what we do is make coffee and add boiling water to our meals. So we don't really get too elaborate. And we bring some bowls and spoons and that kind of stuff. But then like I also said before, the pot comes with a little frying pan lid, so we could fry stuff if we wanted, but that's really all we bring.
Well, I just want to go eat all the things now.
Yeah, welcome to my life. I'm like always editing food photos or videos and like always staring at food.
That's awesome.
Not complaining.
Well, and I would recommend that anybody listening that you go to Amanda's channel and see all of the awesome like food ideas that, because obviously we didn't talk about everything that you've done in video form and like snacks and how to prep meals and that kind of stuff. And so lots of really cool information that I personally watched and have learned a lot of cool things that I want to do in future trips that I have. But I kind of want to do, just to wrap things up, a like past and future question. So I'm curious what one of your like favorite backpacking or outdoor experiences was in 2020, and then looking forward to 2021, what kind of cool things do you have planned that people could look forward to see on your channel and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I would say 2020, my favorite was probably Halls Creek Narrows in Capitol Reef. I know you commented on that one.
Yes. I have not done Halls Creek yet. And so, yeah, I'm excited to hear about this.
Yeah, that was definitely, we did it as a 3-day, 2-night backpacking trip. And it was just so beautiful. It's hard to even put into words. Like we had the best weather and the Slot Canyon was beautiful. There's just nothing like a Slot Canyon. Pretty much all my top trips are always Slot Canyon related. And just the pace of the trip was awesome. There was a really narrow part. So we knew that we were going to have to get like chest deep water at some point. And it obviously will depend on the year, how mm-hmm. deep that actually is. And so we start hiking through the Slot Canyon part in the morning and the water is cold. Like I was like not looking forward to a chest deep swim at all. And luckily we kind of had planned it so that the swim was at the very end of the shaded Slot Canyon so that we could get right out into the sun. And I always like love and hate doing that kind of stuff because it's like you can't breathe and it's so uncomfortable, but then you feel so, so good after. So that was definitely like the highlight of the trip was going through that super narrow. Like I couldn't touch the ground. I had to actually swim, which is, I can't really remember the last time I had to swim like that for, you know, quite a while in a Slot Canyon. It was like 30 seconds, but right. It's a lot longer.
Yeah, I've only had to do that, not to like take over with my own personal story, but it's kind of interesting because I know you've also done the Paria mm-hmm. River Canyon. I did it several years ago in March, and it's the only time that I have ever had to swim. And if people aren't familiar with the Paria River, it's easily one of the most beautiful and amazing backpacking trips that anybody could do. I don't know what your personal feelings on it, but it's still one of my all-time favorite trips that I've ever done.
Yeah, I think that's my all-time favorite. I did that in 2019, or else I definitely would have said that for 2020.
But, fair enough. We did it in March. And the river was running at 90 CFS, which may not give a lot of context for everybody listening, but that is basically like knee deep to thigh deep water for a good like 20 mile section of a river that you're walking through. And there's a section right before the Buckskin Gulch confluence that when that really long, like 12, 15 mile Slot Canyon comes in and meets the Paria River, that we had to swim. And it was 35 degrees ambient temperature outside in like that narrow Slot Canyon. And we went like chest deep, packs above our heads, and it's late afternoon. And that was just one of the most miserable experiences at that time. But I look back and it's still one of my favorite things that I've done on a backpacking trip, even though it's like not at all what I wanted to do.
Yeah, that's crazy. Cause I did Paria in October, I believe. And it was like, we had basically ankle deep water the entire time. I don't think it ever got past my knees at any point. So it's just kind of crazy, the difference in the seasons and the years.
Yeah. So what about 2021 for you? What have you got planned and what can we look forward to seeing on your YouTube channel?
So I have a lot more camp cooking stuff coming. So new recipes and Dutch oven cooking videos. And then for trips, there's going to be, like we kind of talked about, a lot more Montana stuff. I am just so excited to get up there this summer and do some backpacking trips in the mountains up there. Mm-hmm. And the Ruby Mountains are also on my list. And I've had it in my head to do a like stand-up paddle boarding or kayaking, I'm fine with either, on Lake Powell and like camp in the little coves and stuff and do—
Oh, cool.
Yeah, like just like paddle around and then camp in a little cove wherever you want, with like basically have all my backpacking gear like on the canoe or paddleboard. I haven't quite thought how it's all going to work out logistically, but that's something I really, really want to do this year.
Man, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I know. Like, especially when it's so hot out to be able to swim and stuff. I want to do more water stuff this year. But yeah.
Very, very cool. Well, to wrap this up, you can now basically talk about where people can find you. Obviously, we've mentioned a lot of YouTube and your blog, but anything you want to share about how people can follow you, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, you can find me on YouTube at Amanda Outside. And like I said, I upload, you know, pretty much every week over there. You can chat with me in the comments. And then my blog is amandaoutside.com. And then I also have an Instagram at Amanda Outside, but I would say like the blog and YouTube are kind of the main places, that I hang out.
Nice. Very cool. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for taking time. I know it's a late night, and well, it's not super late, but it's an evening, and I appreciate you finally being able to make it work with our busy schedules to sit down and chat for a little bit, and just really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
Thank you again to Amanda for sharing so many great ideas and sharing more about her YouTube channel and blog. Links for her blog and channel are in the show notes, but you can also search Amanda Outside on YouTube to find her and see all of the things that she's working on and the content that she's putting out. Thank you all for listening today, and look forward to the episode coming up after this one. I've got a really fun conversation with a friend in Canada where we talk about the basics of planning backpacking trips. So stay tuned for that on the next episode of The Backpacking Experience.